it's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Buenos dias, chicas y chicos. Hello and welcome, a very warm welcome to the Joy of Paddle podcast. Spreading and sharing the supreme delight of this wonderful and fast-growing game. I'm your host, Minter Dial, and this podcast is brought to you by Paddle 1969, the largest manufacturer of premium paddle courts, one court for life by Paddle 1969. The Joy of Paddle is part of the Evergreen Podcast Network. For more information about the network, go ahead and check out evergreenpodcast.com. So this is the inaugural season of the Joy of Paddle podcast. And to start with, we're going to do an episode once every fortnight. Episodes will drop every other Wednesday at 12 noon London time. Please let us know what you think about the show by putting up a rating and review. So for this 11th episode of the Joy of Paddle podcast, it's with Elena Martin Ortiz, commonly known as Elena Martin, who is an accomplished paddle player and was highly ranked in the predecessor to the World Paddle Tour, the Opel Paddle Tour. Elena's represented and won with Catalonia in the Spanish Team Championships. She is also a senior manager at Monitor Deloitte, the multinational strategy consulting practice of Deloitte Consulting. In this conversation with Elena, we discuss her life as a paddle player, her best shots and funniest moments. We also discuss the state of paddle worldwide, the unique Swedish case, and the global prospects for paddle, and much more. A really intriguing and exciting exchange. Vamos! Elena Martin Ortiz. I know you go by Elena Martin. Great to have you on the Joy of Paddle. You are a wonderful person. I've been so excited to have you on. In your own words, Elena, who are you?
Very happy to be here. I was very much looking forward to this podcast, Minter. I am a professional in the sports industry and also a tennis and paddle player.
Well, you also happen to work at Deloitte, right? And we'll get into that a little bit afterwards. But let's start talking about your route to paddle, Elena. Naturally, since you come with a little accent, probably happened in Spain.
Yes, it did. So I started playing tennis, not a very young age, but something like 10 years old. And then 3 years later, a couple of paddle courts were built in my club. That was back in the beginning of the 90s. So my mom started to play and she said, hey, why don't you try? So I started taking some lessons. So I would play tennis. And on top of that, I played paddle at the same time. I mean, I played paddle a couple of days. I played tennis a couple other days. I was not like a very successful tennis player. I was okay, but I was not at all the best in my country or my region even. And when I started playing paddle, my coach, she suggested I should go to the Spain championship under 16. I was 15 at the time. So I went and I made it to semifinals, which was like, wow, I was made for this. Being honest, I think I was okay, I was good, but probably the little competition had a lot to do with that compared to my success in tennis tournaments.
And I assume it's always it's of course going to be a question of your partner, how you get along, how well you play together, and sometimes the draw is favorable, not so favorable. But in any event, this obviously set you along. And what was the discussion with your parents at this point? You're like, Mama, Papa, I want to play paddle. Like, but tennis is a more noble sport. What is this paddle thing?
No, they were so happy with that. I mean, Paddle offered me, it all went quite fast because of making these semifinals. I got like a scholarship from the Spanish Federation. It was not, I mean, it was not a big deal, but it told something, right? So I started playing paddle more and more and playing tennis less and less until when I was 18 or maybe 17 already. I stopped playing tennis and only trained paddle. I trained 5 6 days a week. I had my trainings at the club, and 1 or 2 days I can't recall now where. With so the ones that were done by the Federation, so they were controlled and sponsored by the Spanish Federation. And then I started playing tournaments not only in my region, but I started traveling. At the point there was this tour called Opel Padel Tour, which was the precedent for the World Padel Tour. And so I started playing that. It was strange because the sport was so underdeveloped, I would say, that in the draw there were professional players, but there were only also people like me who are not professionals. I was studying and slash afterwards working at the same time, and I would let's say do both things.
Which is very common, for example, today in Britain, the majority of the people who play very good level play a lot of tournaments. They're bankers, or they're doing what they can to make money, because as the sport grows up, the winnings aren't there yet. But you made a lot of success. You won lots of team events at the Catalonia, the Spanish team championships with the Real Club de Polo. And you got really good at it. And I'm wondering, for you, like me, I played a fairly good level of tennis in my youth. And I have this narrative around how paddle and tennis are complementary. I'm wondering, to what extent do you think paddle helps your tennis? And because we always talk about how tennis can help with paddle at the net, but not at the wall. But what about the reverse, paddle to tennis?
It has helped me a lot. So here in Spain, we play a lot. We play clay, basically tennis. In my court, in my club, we have 30 something tennis courts, of which one is hard court, and the rest are clay. So we are not volley players. So what now? Now I play masters. When I play masters, I'm very good at the volley because I have played paddle for so long. And a lot of the people I play against, they say, "Oh, you have a lot of resources because you can play drop shot, you can play in the volley, you have a very good smash from anywhere in the court." And that I developed 100% in padel. People who have developed themselves playing clay, they're very good at the back of the so at the end of the court. I mean, you can see Rafa. He barely goes to the net. Whereas having played paddle, I'm very self-confident in it.
It's amazing. I totally agree with you. I mean, I end up doing a lot. I even do a lot more chiquitas. I will do many sort of half court lobs over if they're at the net. I want to come over, beat them up with that, and I feel very, very much more
Nice hobby.
wily. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's fun. Well, so hey, listen, that's the complementarity of these sports. So how would you describe your style of play today, these days, Elena?
You know what? In padel, I'm a very, I would say, conservative defensive player. So I can hit in 1,000 balls. My opponents would like freak out, meaning like, how did you
Oh,
get that in?
not again. Oh, damn.
And I was very proud of that style because it needs to be very tough in terms of mind and be very concentrated, I would say. But you know what? This hasn't translated into my tennis. So I'm very poor at hitting again and again in tennis. Like, I need to be very aggressive. I don't know why, but in
Well,
padel.
tennis is by nature aggressive because you need to
Absolutely.
push it through the other person. Whereas paddle, you got the wall behind you. La
You know,
pared es su amiga, right?
yeah, exactly. When I was 18 or 19, I was sponsored by Dunlop. And they did these like flyers, like these cards that you would give away in tournaments. I mean, no one wanted my cards, right? Because they were better players, I mean, professional players, but still, I had my cards. And at the
That's
back of the
exciting.
card, yeah, I sent you a picture of that previous to the call. And at the back of the card, they were asking, what is your favorite, how do you say, your favorite hit? Do you call it
Shot.
like that? Shot. Yeah. What is your favorite shot? And I said, the lobby. And my friends were saying, how the hell can you be proud of the, I said, hey, I'm very good at doing lobbies. Like, I go over everyone, like, I throw them this distance to the wall.
I love it. Well, I've had on my show Gabo Loredo, and Gabo said that's his best shot. That's his favorite shot. And I think smart paddle players know. I mean, Martin Dineno, for example. I mean, his lobbing ability. I mean, of course, there are many great lobbers, but he's very tranquil, and they just keep on landing between the service line and the wall. And what are you going to do with it? That's fun stuff. If you had to describe yourself as an animal on the court, then what animal would Elena be on the paddle court?
Oh, that's difficult. That's a difficult one. I would say something like an ant or a squirrel, like a
I
warp,
love
warp,
it.
right?
Right. I love it. I love it. Very
I
original. And
would
what
never
about?
be a tiger or something like
Right,
this.
right,
Not at
right.
all.
Those let that you play on the right, I'm guessing.
I do. I do. I
Yeah.
play on the right, and I usually play with let's say aggressive or yeah, players. And what I love best, I get along very well. I have had very few partners, and I love it when I do like a Chiquita from the right to the right, and then they have to return it a little bit up, and then my colleagues hop wins the point. It's like that's my best like hit
Right.
or playing.
Tactic. I like to say I'm the one of the 1-2 punch. So I get the one in, I make it a little bit difficult, make something happen, and then they pop it up and number two. Excellent. So what about a shot that you like to improve? What shot do you work on that you feel like you could do better with?
I can't do the vibra. I think it's a modern shot that I was never taught. And the ball bounces that fast when so my opponents do that, it bounces that fast that I think it will help me a lot. And not sure if you do it from the right. I'm just thinking you probably do it only from the left, so from the
You do mostly from the left, but you can still do it. You could
I could still.
absolutely. I mean, I still try to do it, that's for sure, on the right. Pop it into the back glass, last glass, or sometimes even down the middle. And what about you?
I have
Sorry.
also learned to hit it hard. When I was younger, my hard hit, so bouncing back, was not so good, but because people were fast, now that I'm a master's, my hard hit is quite okay because they don't run that fast.
Nice. You obviously know many people in the paddle world. You have many friends who are pros. But notwithstanding your friends, who would you say are your favorite players in the female and male sides?
In females,
Alejandra Salazar.
Alejandra Salazar, yes, she's also a friend. I wouldn't say like best friend, but she used to be a friend too. I love so I think all the players have all the things, like there's Ari, there's Paulita Dinamita, Triay. I do like all of them very much, but I think Alejandra is. She's so mature. She's so self-confident. She's always like so constant. no mistakes. She may not be as brilliant as some others, but I love how constant and consistent she is.
Mm-hmm.
And as for the guys, I like Arturo Coelho very much. I think
El Sordo, both, the lefty.
Yeah, both the guys who have played with Vela in the last previous seasons, I think they both learned the best from Vela. I'm good friends with him. And mm-hmm. he has this purpose of teaching and helping the younger players. So it's like a win-win, right? He has this aim of developing young players at the age and the stage that he is, and he can get benefited from that because they have the power that he doesn't have at this point. And I think they both learned a lot of what he taught in the year and a half that they played with Vela. They got the very good things that he has, and developed into their own skills, which made it like impressive.
Indeed. Well, I've had the pleasure of having Mike on my show.
Okay.
Because he speaks English, that helps. You know a lot of players. Maybe your anecdote can come from others, but what's your funniest thing that's ever happened to you around paddle?
Do you want to know? I played a final of the one of the tournaments that we had. It was not a Opel Paddle Tour. It was a, let's say, not so
prestigious.
Prestigious tournament. But it was a final. It was like a good event. And I'm warming up. And there's a ball that, so my opponent hits the net and it stays on her side. So mm-hmm. I go over the net to get the ball, and I broke the net. Like warming up. People like starting to sit on the, there was the seats and everything, because it was already quite developed at the point, the sport here. So all people with their entrances and getting into their seats, and like I broke the net. It got like,
Mamma mia.
It took like 15 or 20 minutes to put it back in place.
Like, and I bet it felt like an hour. Right. So embarrassing.
So embarrassing. I'm never, never, ever going for the ball over the net again.
Well, in the realm of sharing then, Elena, this reminds me of one time when crossing over in a friendly match, I went to cross over and put my leg over and I caught my right leg, which was the trailing leg, and I just fell flat on my face, and I had blood on my hand. I mean, how do you do that sort of thing, right? It's not even a very high net, but stuff like that. Elena, you play a lot of paddle. You have a lot of great friends in the paddle world. What is the life lesson that you feel that paddle has brought to you?
I always tell this story in the when I had job interviews. So, I haven't had to experience a lot of effort in my undergrad or graduate studies. I did engineering. I was good at math, so it was kind of practicing. But what I learned from paddle is that. When I started, I was not the most talented player. I'm not the one, as I explained with Alejandra, I'm not the one who's doing these, I don't know, like Gemma's drop shot, or I'm not that kind of girl. I'm
magic.
I don't have a lot of magic, sorry to say. But I learned that by training more, and by devoting a lot of time, being very consistent, very focused, concentrated, I could play better than people that started from a better position than I did. Mm. So I learned a lot about being tenacious, constant, not like you lose a match. It's okay. Just keep up training again and again and again.
I love it. Well, I think tenaciousness, good training, and keep the confidence, because you see some other showboaters And you're like, oh my God, how do they do that? It's beyond our capabilities. I'm like you, I'm not overly, you know, maravilloso with my shots, but I consider this idea of always learning, always keep in the mode of learning. How can I do better? And as we get older, of course, we have to deal with that.
And also try to leverage what you can do. I'm playing against younger players and I see they have this impressive power and their vibora that I can't do. But if you play a slow ball in the corner with a lot of slice, and then they struggle to get it out from there. So it's like, try to play your weapons intelligently. And so power is not everything.
Fortunately for us, Elena. For us. All right, so let's now move into your work at Deloitte, because obviously you're working in a very serious, large organization. And it was quite a surprise to me when Deloitte came out with a paddle tennis report. I guess the first one was 2 years ago, 3 years ago, yep. I'm not sure. I mean, what was the story going on in behind the doors as to making a report on this new game called Paddle? I mean, Deloitte not being Spanish, I mean, generally speaking, you imagine the sort of the worldwide Deloitte office saying, what is this game? Are you paddleboard, platform tennis, pickleball? What is this? No, it's paddle. Tell us how it came around.
We have some independence in the country, so there's some decisions we can make. It happened the following way. I had met some partners, and so I have some relationships within Deloitte who play paddle. And actually, I met some male partners who wanted to compete in a company competition, and they needed to have females. So basically they cherry picked females who could play, right? So I met this group of guys, and one of them got approached by Playtomic because they knew each other from somewhere else. And Playtomic had this idea of, because there's no single institution that gives figures about paddle, such as FIFA, that's for soccer, or ITF, that's in tennis. And so they wanted to position themselves as the place to be, the place to go for paddle figures. And they told this to this guy. This guy knew that I had played before, etc. So he proposed to me. Within my business group, we decided to do that because it's been after the pandemic, it's not being easy for in general for consulting firms or professional services firms to hire, because people are more into the mood of startupping and so cooler jobs, right? And so we thought, that this could help us position consulting as a cooler job, because we're in this paddle, this hyping sector. So we decided to do the report with Playtomic, and that's how it all happened. We did this first report. We had quite some success, and we have done some works and deals, meaning professional paid deals, after the first report. So I got a lot of insight and a lot of information after the first report. And then the second report was just very natural. It was pretty easy because...
Update.
And I had all the information because I had been in touch with a lot of people after the first report. So that's what how it came up.
Well, I love that. So in this, there's the notion of helping for recruitment, the image of Deloitte, making it feel young and cool. And then there's also even the reality of possibly making business, consulting, helping partners, investors figure out how to build clubs and make money out of it. Makes a lot of sense to me. And the relationship with Playtomic, of course, is interesting too.
Yeah, sorry, but to interrupt you, The second part, the commercial part and being in touch with the institutions and helping with business, was a consequence. But I honestly didn't think of that when we produced the first report. It was so surprising to me, though it seems obvious now in hindsight. And we have a very good relationship with Playtomic. I think the reports have proven very useful and successful for both of us. So the relationship has, it's very natural.
And so when is the 2024 one come out?
We haven't spoken about this yet, so I need to catch up with them. But probably beginning of next year, that's what we usually do.
Fabulous. So in the report 2023, which I'm hoping you'll find out, you'll be able to help us, others to get a copy of, who are interested, you talk about obviously the lay of the land, how many countries are growing, so one of the highlights in the report, latest report, is about Sweden, of course, because Sweden has this spectacular growth. And as the report identifies, and I thought that was really interesting, that it was just a unique reasons for its specifically hyperbolic growth related to the pandemic, Ibrahimovic, the football player, and all that. How do you think Sweden's going to pan out now that it's sort of, we see tapering down and some clubs closing?
I think what happened in Sweden is that the supply of courts, so offer, went over the expected long-term demand of the country because of these specific circumstances that you just explained. So clubs will close and they will continue closing. I don't think there's much more to come in terms of closures, but it will stabilize at the rate that it should have stabilized if it hadn't been for the circumstances. So we, in the report and in the jobs that we saw, we have calculated like a penetration rate, meaning how many people can play paddle in a country. And that depends mostly on the penetration of tennis sports. On the culture of sports of the country, more specifically the penetration of racket sports in the country, then like economic situation, meaning you need to have to be over a certain threshold to be able to
afford it,
yes. And the availability and price of land, and that comes in from the supply side, because if land is very expensive, for example, I don't know, in Paris or in London, it's more difficult for paddle courts to develop there. So it's a profitable business, but depending on the how much is people is willing to spend in a match, and how much the land is costing, then numbers don't even out, or you can't make a profit. So the supply of courts is lower.
So would you say that if you're looking at a city and you want to bring paddle to it, and let's say you have an economically favorable situation, you have a good sporting legacy of racket sports, would you think that the argument with a tennis club is to eliminate a couple of courts in a bubble and put in four or five paddle courts in there? Is that going to be more profitable for them? The issue, of course, is, oh, well, we don't want paddle here kind of thing with the existing members. But how does it work economically for a club that is tennis that's thinking of expanding to paddle?
So in terms of economics, it pays out. Why? Because in the surface that you have two tennis players, you can fit up to 12 paddle players. It depends on the size of the tennis court, because I mean the lines
sure
are what they are, but the margins. So you can either fit two or three paddle courts. So you could fit 8 or 12 players. So being if everyone paid the same, numbers are very telling. The other thing about having these players who don't want paddle, and so if you have a club that is large enough, and I would say large is 10 courts, you will have people who will fill in those paddle courts and getting so changing those two tennis courts for or one tennis court for three paddle courts or two is going to be fine for the tennis players. Usually there are some people like you or me who play both, but people who are good at tennis and they're in a very good form and they play regularly and so, they're not the first one to move into paddle, because at the beginning it is they move less, the distances are very short, so they feel like they're not doing as much sport. But there's a lot of people who are not playing tennis because tennis is much more difficult technically, because the racket you need to hit the ball further from your hand. So
yes, it's 2 meters away basically.
So the further you hit the ball from the hand, it's more difficult. So table tennis is easier than paddle. Paddle is easier than tennis. And so there's some people who are either they're not so fit, or they technically can't afford to play tennis, and they will get into paddle. And it's also very social. There's in my club, for example, I would say 70% of the people who are playing paddle are women. Because they go, they bring their kids to tennis lessons or something, and they get together instead of having coffee and chatting. They play paddle and they chat because you're so close to the other one. And at least they're doing some sport. Some may argue that it's not as hard or as requiring as a sport as tennis, which maybe, I mean, it's something we could discuss. But at least these people are doing some sports, which they wouldn't do if they only had the opportunity to play tennis.
Well, I wonder, so the socialization, the number of players on the court, whether you can charge the same amount is one thing. But for sure, what that means is that you have 12 people who can go buy beers in the club bar afterwards, and that has to be profitable. And I'm wondering, and listening to Elena, how many, because of the social nature, as both of us know about the game, how many paddle love affairs sprout because of, you know, meeting on the paddle court? Because it is such a social environment.
I can tell you one very fun story. Let me first address your question. I don't think it's so like love affairs like come out from a paddle match, but in my case, for example, you met someone, I don't know, at a gathering or at a bar or a pub or something, and if you have the same interests, you'd say, oh, why don't we play next week? And so you get together and you play, me, my friend, him, his friend, and you have a beer or a Coca-Cola afterwards. And so you start meeting each other. So I used to do that when I was young a lot, and because you share the same interests, right? And the fun story I wanted to tell you is I knew Bella, Fernando Belasteguin, because I used to play this Opel paddle court, Opel Opel Tour. I was like something like 22 or so, 21, and he was 24, and he came to my club. We had a competition there from this Opel Tour, and he was expecting to make it to the final, but he lost in semifinal. So that was Saturday evening, and he called and said, "Oh, I'm so upset, and we lost. Blah blah blah. How did you see the match? Blah, blah. And by the way, I mean, we have our hotel till tomorrow, and we have our flight tomorrow. Do you have anything to do?" And I said, "Not really. So let's do something." So I called my best friend, and we went out for dinner. Belasteguin, his partner, I think it was Lima at the time, my best friend and me. And so they have ended up marrying each other. Yeah, so.
A paddle love affair. Love it. Well, a paddle-related love affair. That's just gorgeous, Elena. Last zone, I just wanted to talk about. So upcoming, in the report, you talk about India and China, the potential for them. It feels like they are still very far away. It's not like they have a tennis culture, really. They're not, the economic climate in India isn't exactly, you know, wealthy like in Sweden or something. But give us an idea. Do you think it's 3 or 5 years before we can start seeing numbers in India and China?
That's a very tough question to start with. I don't think it's going to be 3 years. I would aim more at 5 years. And I think India will come a little bit earlier in time than China. The Indian government has this, there's like a regulation or something for the federation, for which you need to have at least one court in every one of the states in order to be considered for a national federation. So there's already a group that is like investing in having one court in each of the states to have a national federation. Mm. So I think this is going to, so this regulation or this norm, I would say, is going to help the sport to develop faster in India. I mean, it's not booming, right? When I mean right. faster, relative terms. But being that it needs to be developed in all of the areas at the same time will necessarily grow the number of courts that there are in the country.
Mm. And Olympics in 2032?
Well, Olympics in the horizon for me is the hot topic. There's a number of requirements that you need to accomplish in order to be Olympic. And as far as I know, and I think that will be the toughest part, since a couple of years, you need to, so there's a maximum of summer Olympic sports that can be held, meaning you will have, so you will have to take out some sport in order for paddle to make it in, which for me will be the toughest part. Probably there's some minority sports that can be, but I mean, there's an existing relationship, existing programs in the countries. So to me, that would be the key to make it Olympic in 32.
Yeah, well, like we say in strategy, or in French, we say choisir, c'est renoncer. We'll have to make choices, and that will be the way. Elena, it has been a tremendous pleasure chatting with you. I love talking about paddle and the future of paddle, which is so bright. How can someone gather more about paddle from what you do with your work and maybe even follow you as a paddle aficionado?
I don't think they want to follow me at this point.
Oh, well, I certainly want to play with you, Elena.
Sure, we'll make it. Either you come to Spain or I'll go to London. And as for the report, we always have them in the Playtomic website. Anyone can download them on. They need to include their email just for follow-up purposes, but it's for free. It's a free download, open in the Playtomic website. So perfect. Maybe you can add the link in your podcast notes or something.
Por supuesto, of course. Hey, listen, Elena. Muchas gracias. Vamos.
It has been so much fun.
So I hope you've enjoyed this Joy of Paddle episode. Please don't forget to subscribe to be the first in queue for the next episode. And if you like what you hear, please do share around with other paddle aficionados. This is a sport that deserves to be played by absolutely everyone. And if you got a story that you'd like to share, please send me an email or a voice note at nminterdial@gmail.com. With that, thanks for listening and see you on the next episode of the Joy of Paddle podcast. Vamos!
Yeah. Pit Pass Moto, sponsored by Moto America, is the show that keeps you up to speed on the latest in motorcycling and brings the biggest names in motorcycle racing right to you. From candid interviews with the top names in racing to providing insights into the trends and trendsetters driving the motorcycle industry, we have you covered. New episodes are available every Thursday at pitpassmoto.com and on your favorite podcast app. Ride on!